He's 28 years of age, and Adama Traore is still talked about as if he's a professional footballer who's a danger, a threat. He's a threat to whatever manager has been stupid enough to buy him. That's it. He scored 10 goals as a forward. He's been playing 10 years.
Tim Sherwood here. You're listening to the Villa Podcast.
The last time we were at Craven Cottage, our beloved owner couldn't even sit. Couldn't even sit the whole way through the match. This is a guy who's come out recently and said he's addicted to this hashtag UTV addiction. This is a guy who said it gets under your skin. A guy who showed that he's just one of us, except he's putting in billions to the club. He showed he's just one of us by saying it can ruin your week. This is a guy who is caught up in the football bug. Imagine, you know, how often have we had these conversations with our own loved ones, not just Sawiris, not just the only loved one in this analogy, but our own loved ones when we talk about, I do enjoy it, I do like it, I know I'm always whinging, I know, but isn't it great? What a distraction. Sure, isn't it great to have an outlet like this? And he is just one of us now. He couldn't sit the whole way through watching Steven Gerrard's last game. He stormed out. Steven Gerrard was sacked within the half hour. And we know what happened after that. We all know what happened after that. But today we went back to Craven Cottage. And I feel like we were back to ourselves. We felt that way against United. It felt that way that we played well. We just didn't get the just rewards. McGinn came out afterwards and said, if we play that way, we'll win more games than we'll lose. And I feel like there was just a nice confidence about Villa again. On the ball, they were pushing it through the lines. Boys were looking forward again. They weren't hiding. They were looking to go get their result. Even when they conceded, they were looking to push forward and get another goal. I don't know. I came away from that a bit heartened, Liam.
I came away from it a bit heartened as well, but from a different perspective. I thought we really dogged it out towards the end. I mean, I can't remember the last time we won a game by playing pretty shite. I mean, it was it must be what it feels like to be a Man United fan. There's big, big moments from big, big players at either end of the pitch. A couple of moments of magic, Conan. Which, luckily enough, despite his pleading, didn't come in the correspondent fixture last season, or he might have had another week of Steven Gerrard and a collective trauma. And the most remarkable thing about the fact that Emery has won 30 of his 50 games since then is that the team hasn't changed all that much. I mean, the back four in this fixture last season was Konsa, Bednarak, Mings and Young. Today it was Cash, Longley, Torres and Moreno. Better, but not massively. The front six, the only difference to today is that we've swapped out Ronnie Ings for Youri Twentymans. Like every win we pick up over the next few months are going to be worth celebrating. Like, sorry, not that the wins are never not worth celebrating, but you know what I'm saying. We're in the trenches. And look, I'm not a World War I soldier, but it's about surviving at the minute and digging in. And we really did that today as well, whenever Fulham put us under a bit of pressure.
It's so apt that you say we are in the trenches, because I think everybody saw the picture of Tyrone Mings back in the Villa gym and everybody got a bit carried away. And let's be honest, so did I. I basically said to you, tell him he's Paul McGrann, send him back out there. You know, it's wartime now. Slap him in the earth, strap him up, put him out. We need as many bodies out there as we can. They're all going to drop, but we need to get, it's a numbers game now. We just need to get over the line with more men standing than Spurs and the Man United. And yeah, like, do you know what I thought was the biggest marker of difference here though? 25 minutes into this match, Liam, Pereira whips one from the right hand side. It's a lovely cross, it's going to the back post. We've seen this story before, and Matt Cash gets up above everyone and heads it back down into the box, but he won the head. He was above all the white shirts in there, and I was like, that guy's tuned in today. Like, that goal's not happening today. Emery is setting about fixing more wrongs in this patch-up that he's been trying to navigate along all season.
Yeah, I was actually wondering, was the best thing that has ever happened to Matty Cash from a defensive perspective was having to play next to Clement Longley in defence? I mean, that really, really, really seemed to switch him on. I mean, like, it's like that time you were... you were flying back from France and the one of the engines blew out and you were obviously shitting yourself, but the only thing that kept you calm, the only thing that kept you level-headed was the fact that the person next to you was shitting themselves even more than you were.
There's always somebody less fortunate than you, and it'll always make you feel a bit better, but it'll also, yeah, drive you into action as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And Matt Cash was a lot more clued in today than he normally has been, and that's great to see, because Jesus Christ, we're going to need that.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/ACAST, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/ACAST.
Let's go through the goals first. There's a couple of other talking points that we get into, but we'll go through the three goals. 2-1 win away to Fulham, and the first one is Ollie Watkins, and it's a disaster of a throw-in. I mean, we spend enough time complaining about our own throw-ins. I don't know what's going through Robinson's mind here. I don't know how casual William wants to be. It's great pressure from Ramsey, and it's a victory. It's a real victory for what you were saying last week, a victory for Ramsey, always wanting to win the ball very cleanly. not barging through the defender, not tripping him, just trying to get a little nick on the ball, and he pokes it out to Watkins, and this turn is just brilliant. He has everybody on a string. He's got the goalkeeper on the string. He has Per Diop on a string. Just turns away, and in doing so, gives himself space, gives himself time, and gives himself the angle, and he drills it into that bottom corner. It's a lovely goal.
My favorite thing in football is reading the intention of someone else, or, you know, or understanding what is possible by humans, or the physics of the moving ball, anticipating and reacting to what's about to happen or what's not about to happen. And sometimes that is noticing a throw-in has too much pace on it, and that the nearest player to a throw-in is a 35-year-old who was fat 3 years ago. And JJ does brilliantly to read it. And then he rewards himself, of course, with his favourite thing, and tries to play the ball far too early, first time out to Ollie Watkins. He does well then to nick in, like you say, and keep his composure, and just realise that William's fucked here and all he has to do is not foul him. And what a turn from Watkins. Jesus Christ, it's so tight, it's so controlled, it's unbelievable. And JJ does brilliantly, but this goal is more about Ollie Watkins. The movement that he was able to do inside the box there, the calmness, the composure, yeah. Absolutely brilliant, devastating.
It was like he was seeing everything in slow motion, like another player there, just they're standing on the ball, they're looking for somebody else to get free, they run into trouble, they shoot into legs. He just saw it all unfold in front of him, and it was glorious. And the second goal, this passage of play, man, this is just unbelievable. Pinging it around with real intent, Torres is coming out, McGinn's on it, like Watkins, lovely touch, gets thrown over by Diop in the process, and he gets back up just in time to see Leon Bailey do a lovely little filthy bit of skill back into Ollie Watkins, who drills it back, gets back in the position. Villa continue to ping it around, John McGinn to Tielemans, and then Tielemans sometimes just makes football look so easy. Not when he's running the length of the pitch, guaranteed. We'll come back to that. Not when he's having to play 93 minutes as well. God love him. We'll come back to that. But just his right foot. Sometimes what he does, it's like, why? why doesn't everybody else just do that? He just looks up and he just passes the ball into space. And it's very easy when Watkins is just running in behind Diop, who doesn't seem to know where he is, and he gets in behind and he just drills home. I wouldn't say it's the most accurate finish, but he does enough again. It's like he sees where the keeper is, and he knows if I put the ball here with that pace, it's a goal.
That goal reminded me of us playing in the Power Leagues and just exploiting the fact that, you know, we were playing against a load of young fellas who were not interested in defending. Like, this is the Premier League. This shouldn't be me passing the ball to you and Spawell. What the fuck is going on? Just in the lead up to this goal, you were talking about how controlled we were on possession and the lovely things that we did. And the commentator announces that Marco Silva has told his players to push up. My fucking ears pushed up. They perked up. I leaned forward in my seat. That the ball was just coming to Torres at this stage. And I was like, has he really told him to push up? He's asked Andreas Pereira to put the squeeze on, has he? Well, let's fucking score then. And if Unai Emery dreams about football, which I really hope he doesn't, I mean, I hope he gives himself a break, even if it is subconsciously. But if he does dream about football, which he definitely does, this is the goal. This is the goal that he sees. Just a string of passes, the centre half, the three centre midfielders, and then the centre forward. And it looks so simple when it comes. I mean, the space between the centre halves is only matched by the void between Bert Leno's ears. It's an absolutely ruthless hit from Ollie. But Leno makes himself as small as possible before. And you'd think the payoff would be that he's ready to spring, but he barely moves. And don't get me wrong, it is a great hit from Ollie Watkins. But like you said, he's not exactly put it in the corner.
And then you're thinking at that stage, let's just go on and put these guys to bed. We already had two offside goals. We had a lot of chances. You're thinking, okay, a third now could open the floodgates up. And then Fulham score. imagine Robinson getting an assist with the day he was having. This is how bad. And it wasn't even, like, I wouldn't even blame Matt Cash, because Robinson has played a really bad cross there under pressure. He's just chased the ball down the wing, gotten a little inch to just poke it into badly. And it's just a complete cock-up from both Longley and Martinez. I mean, we can debate who the winner is here in the What the Fuck Award. There's two other nominations, but it's going to take some beating this. And like, both of them really at fault. Longley should definitely just deal with it. I don't know what Martinez is doing out there. It's very unlike him to just leave an open net like that. I mean, that's what other keepers do. That's not what Martinez does.
Longley has to go to that. Yeah, I don't care if he's gotten a shout from his keeper telling him to shut the fuck up. Like, make your own mind up, Clement. Like, understand your place in the world. And I don't mean appreciate your own autonomy, the fact that you're your own man. I literally mean understand your physical place in the world. Understand that is on a football pitch 3 yards in front of Muniz. And you're right, Cash does well to get close enough to make sure the cross is powerless. And it's 100% Longley's ball. But Longley, once again, exhibits all the special awareness of Amelia Earhart. You're right to point out Martinez. Like, if Martinez is coming for it, then come for it. His angle of approach was so weird. It was like Amelia Earhart trying to...
Yeah, if you want to detour quickly on Amelia Earhart, always thought it was strange that her plan was to land on a Pacific island. This was somebody who landed in Derry when they were aiming for France. Now, obviously, very talented, very brave, a trailblazer, but that was such a risk to take, and that's exactly what Emmy Martinez did as well. He gave no room for error by leaving the entire goals open. There were three other goals in this game, and Watkins, I mean, we thought we're seeing the best of his finishing when he was offside again. And Tim Ream also had an offside goal. You know, my antennas were up, free kick, goal. I thought, oh, here we fucking go. Where's Austin McPhee? And it turns out two people were offside. And I think it was Paulinho and Tim Ream were both offside. And then Moreno's offside goal as well. There was a hint of, are they drawing the lines in the right place there? It looks like they're drawing it on Bailey's heel. We'll never know. We'll never know if they got that call right. But that was just a corner to Watkins, and Moreno came out a split second too late.
The Watkins one, it is finished with typical, I know I'm offside aplomb from Ollie Watkins. it's really great football. Watkins is actually probably running, expecting the pass to Bailey and getting himself free for the subsequent cross in. But Tielemans never plays that pass. I don't think Tielemans has ever rolled a ball to the winger. Like, what's the point if it's only going to come back into the centre forward anyway? Yuri Tielemans just think, I'll just give it to the centre forward. No point getting Bailey involved here. Cut out the middleman and just give it to the middleman instead. And the Ream one, the flick on and the finish are both offside, you're right. And well done, Austin McPhee. You've coached the players to stand still in a straight line. The next step is to coach them to win a fucking header. And then Moreno, yeah, look, it's easy to be annoyed because it's so close. It's easy to be suspicious. Not that there's a grand conspiracy against Aston Villa. I mean, these lads aren't smart enough to pull off a conspiracy. They've reached the limit of their mental capacity when they've counted that there are 22 players in the pitch. Can you imagine the referees in the Premier League trying to remember the rules and trying to figure out how they're going to bend them? Like, that's never going to happen. Forget about that. There's no conspiracy against Aston Villa. They're just really bad at their jobs. The other way to think about it is that if it was John McGinn, his arse would have been half a yard offside. So, you know, we got unlucky with the fact that Moreno's arm was extended. The power that Watkins was able to generate and the finish from Moreno are both brilliant, though. I think that's the most frustrating thing about this. It was a really good goal from the two lads, and they probably deserved it.
This Moreno lad has proved to be a goal threat, and I didn't take any pleasure from the fact that I had him benched on my fantasy football team. I genuinely just wanted him to score for Aston Villa's sake. So that'll tell you how much of a fan I am.
Who did you captain this week? Obviously you went for Watkins, did you?
No. So the only other thing I want to talk about, there's two other things I want to talk about at the top of the show. The penalty shout, I mean, this is just classic. This is Diop on Watkins. It's classic, you know, it's a free anywhere else in the pitch. And the commentator, I know they were having a stinker all day anyway. I mean, started with the start of the game, talking about Diaby being on the bench, and that just shows the strength and depth Villa have. It's unbelievable. And, you know, Diaby being on the bench also shows how much activity they've had in the transfer window recently. Anyway, they also said, and maybe they were right on this isn't really on them, but they said perhaps they don't want to embarrass a rookie referee by giving the penalty. Now, we know that John Brooks was on VAR, so that's definitely a no for him, but I mean, the opposite. He's tripped him and barged him. It's definitely a foul, but it's just like not in the box. Threshold hasn't been hit there.
Yeah, it's really, really frustrating. Like, you're right, it's definitely a foul. I think if this is going to be universally applied by referees the entire world over, then we need to change the rules. We need to say there is a higher threshold for a foul in the box. See what you think is a foul. There isn't a foul. That would shut down these arguments. Here's what a foul is in the box. You have to decapitate somebody or whatever they seem to think it is. But like I said, any really, it's more of a foul than the one on De Cordova Reed, I'd say. But like, you know, if Torres does that out the pitch as well and just runs into the back of De Cordova Reed, it's probably given as a free kick as well. The worst thing about this one is that there's a big bouncing ball. I prefer if Torres just ran around them, to be honest. The ball's in the air for that long. And it's going to take someone like De Cordova Reed a fair amount of time to figure out what to do with the balls that's dropping out. So Torres had plenty of time just to walk around them and get in the way, get himself goal side. But the thing that confuses me about the way De Cordova Reed flopped to the ground there is, seeing as so many of these people are such cheating bastards, I am always astonished by how bad they are at diving.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not trying to encourage diving, but De Cordova Reed felt the nudge in the back, realized he couldn't control the ball, and then fell. It couldn't have looked less natural. Yeah. Did he actually think he was going to get away from that? It actually made everybody just be annoyed at him rather than acknowledging the fact that he probably was fouled. Stupid stuff. Like, if you're going to be a cheating bastard, at least figure out how to do it.
Yeah, he definitely, I think they did call it correctly. They said he went down in two phases there. I mean, the first part he wasn't going down. The first part was just his reaction to the nudge, which is a step forward. And then the second part was the decision to go down. I think the Watkins one as well, just the biggest shame of it was Bailey's pass with his right foot, which the commentator said he didn't have one. He said it was for standing on. With his right foot around the corner, like that. That weight of pass, that distance of a pass, it was just glorious. Probably the winner of the Paul Merson, that's just filthy award. And it was just such a shame that we didn't get something from that pass alone.
Yeah, it was an absolutely brilliant pass. And imagine saying that about Leon Bailey. Like, obviously, they haven't watched Aston Villa, given the other things you just ran through there, but having seen him do that in the match, how could you possibly have the cheek and the lack of wherewithal to say that? Like, surely you can see that he clearly does have a right foot, and it's the most dangerous right foot in the Premier League.
Okay, let's take a break and we're going to come back with WhatsApp whinges. Some fines first before we go anywhere, and it's a quadruple whammy for Alex Moreno. Alex Moreno is getting a 1 month fine for this one day of work, and the first one is just a right-footed pass on the left-hand side, goes out of play. He was looking for Jacob Ramsey. Second one is when he slips on his arse when John McGinn just rolls the ball out to him and he concedes another throw-in. The third is when he throws the ball out for a goal kick. This is 2 weeks in a row and Aston Villa player has thrown the ball out for a goal kick, bounced one over the head of Ollie Watkins. And the fourth is when he conceded an unnecessary corner because Traore was behind him. I swear, these boys in that position, you know, when they're running with a forward coming up their back, they're running towards their goals or towards their byline. They don't appreciate that you still have to control the ball with your feet. So, like, even if Traore nicks in there, he still has to control it. And, like, that's a good thing when Traore still has to do that. Yeah, like, it's not rugby. It's not American football. It's not whoever gets there first wins. You still have a lot to do when you do win it. So, just panic a little less. You don't have to kick it out of play for a corner.
Absolutely disgraceful behavior from Alex Moreno. I mean, no... what you're doing, I know who you're playing against on a football pitch, and if it's Adama Traore, then just take a fucking beat. Take a beat, pal. He probably hasn't even realised there's a threat on here. He's probably stopped running, and even if he hasn't, who cares? Do you know how many top-flight goals Adama Traore has scored in his career, Connor?
I don't.
10. He's 28 years of age, and Adama Traore is still talked about as if he's a professional footballer who's a danger, a threat. He's a threat to whatever manager has been stupid enough to buy him. That's it. He scored 10 goals as a forward. He's been playing 10 years.
Wow. And it's like the Lingard syndrome, isn't it? It sort of feels like he's always about to break through. He's about to have his moment.
Well, he did have a moment in this game, and it was a really, really big save. A really, really big save from Martinez. But, like, Traore's is about as dangerous as a kitten wearing fucking oven mitts. It's a really good save, but Jesus, I've never been more pleased to know who was bearing down on the Aston Villa goal. Like, he picked the ball up on the halfway line at one stage and stepped past someone, and the commentator, who I have to assume has only ever seen him play on FIFA, he shouts out, "Try to stop him!" And just as Traore's created the 10 yards of space for himself, he scoops the ball from the right-hand side half space out to the left-hand side corner flag about 25 yards ahead of Harry Wilson. Like, that's the first time I've ever felt sorry for Harry Wilson, incidentally. But that's how you stop Adama Traore. Let him have the fucking ball. Let him have space. Have we ever told the story about the only time we've had a fight on the football pitch? There was some lad falling over the ball in front of you for what felt like 2.5 minutes, and then he knocked the ball into the bottom corner, and the whole time he had the ball in front of you. At the edge of our box, I was leaning forward on my toes waiting for the counter-attack, and when he scored, I remember he did score. I turned to him and said, go on, Matt.
No, he scored because you were giving out to me for not putting pressure on him, and I was saying there's no need, he's not going anywhere, look at the state. Like, and this, unfortunately for him, played out in front of him then for the next 5 minutes. We were arguing about how shite this player is in front of us. And you said, I should have just gone and took the ball if he was that shite, and I was saying, but he's a big awkward cunt, we just have to stand here and they'll give it away eventually.
Yeah, I said, what the fuck was that? You said he's shite. I was waiting for him to lose the ball. I said, no, because he's shite, take it off him. But we were both leaning around the lad who has just scored and was walking in between us while we were having an argument about how shite he was. And if that was Adama Traore, Conan, we would have both been right. Because that's how you defend against Adama Traore. Whatever way you fucking want, he's shite.
Speaking of which, there's only a $1 player getting fined today. Matt Cash did a Forrest Gump down the right hand side just before happening. We need to unfurl a banner to say stop. You know, you've gone far enough. He just ran straight out of play. A great, great run, blistering run down the right hand side. Nobody was catching him, and he wasn't catching the ball in the end. The first WhatsApp whinge for normal replays, they need to stop going to the VAR camera. This like gives me conniptions. I feel like I'm, like every time I see that, do you know what I'm talking about? It's like half a bird's eye view. It's a 45 degree type of thing on the sideline, right at the box, and it's like it's tilted. And if a bird flew down a 45 degree angle, that's a view. But it's got like a different color as well. It's like it's not as high a quality camera. It's obviously why they get so many mistakes with VAR. And every time they show it, just for a normal replay, I sit up and like, what the fuck are they looking at here? It looks like they're looking at something because the replay of it's always slower as well. It's just a terrible idea.
Yeah, I suppose they got to get their money's worth somehow, Conan. And by the way, that is not the reason why they get so many things wrong with VAR. It's nothing to do with the cameras. It's the fact that there are humans who aren't very good at their job sitting behind the cameras, as you well know.
The only other WhatsApp ones I have is, what about the free kick? John McGinn, Leon Bailey, Douglas Luiz are standing around discussing who's going to hit it. And Matt Cash is there as well. Matt Cash has a lot to say for this free kick routine. Matt Cash continues to lean over. It's like, you sure you don't want me to hit it? I swear to God, McGinn was waving him away at one stage. It's like, you know, the adults are speaking here. Go away. You're not part of this.
Is this the same free kick that Leon Bailey tried to bend around the wall the wrong way? He bent it away from the nets around the outside of the wall with his left foot. What the fuck was that about? How are we going to possibly introduce a fine for this? It'll never happen again, I hope.
He beat the wall. Let's take a breather and we're going to come back after this. Roy Keane thinks Scott Parker is a dweeb.
In one single moment, your whole life can turn round. I stand there for a minute, staring straight into the ground. Looking to the
Roy Keane thinks everybody's a dweeb.
Well, feels like it's caved in, proper sorry frown. Please let me show you how we could only just be for us.
I just thought every time he cut back from Parker being interviewed, for some reason he's been interviewed two or three times before the game, and he's talking shit obviously, and every time he cut back it looked like Roy Keane was holding in a laugh, and it looked like, you know, Carragher had that little knowing look that he has sometimes, you know, when he knows what somebody's laughing at or whatever.
Like, he's a proper football bloke, you know, and he tries to pretend that he's intelligent as well, so then pretentious football writers can get behind him. Scott and Roy Keane, just, that's absolute fodder for Roy Keane. You know, he snuffs that out immediately. He hates bullshit, and you're right, he hates Scott Parker. Like, even at the end of that game, the story isn't fucking Scott Parker. The camera's on Scott Parker's face. Aston Villa have just climbed into the Champions League places, never to be dislodged. That's the story. It's not fucking Scott Parker getting spanked again.
A lot of Ronnie Rosenthal nominations to start us off in the award categories. And what about Jacob Ramsey coming inside on his right foot? What about it? I mean, he pulled the shot wide, but when Jacob Ramsey did this, I knew it was different. I knew, like, Matt Cash wins a header to back post. Jacob Ramsey looks like he's about to telegraph another pass out to Moreno, and he just shifts it onto his right foot, gets away from the defender, gets his shot off. And in that moment, even though he hit it wide, I felt like he discovered who he was again.
Yeah, there we go. There's the incision, the confidence, the remembrance of things past. Maybe the grass had just been freshly cut, Conan, and that triggered something in his memory. Maybe he had just had some tea-soaked Madeleines as his pre-game meal. I don't know, but something worked for Jacob Ramsey there. What didn't work there, of course, was my Proust reference when I was speaking to you.
Rodrigo got in behind Longley from a Pereira ball over the top. Him and Torres just done so easily. Longley has this habit as well, so it wasn't as much on this one. He did do it, but it didn't have as big an impact. But he has this habit of pushing forwards into more space. pushes him away from his challenge and says, off you go. Like, he did it at the edge of the box. He freed up Rodrigo as well. Like, he was trying to hold the ball up. Longley's on him. He's not going anywhere. And he pushes him away, and Rodrigo lets fly a shot on the half volley.
Yeah, the last thing Clement Longley needs to do is create more space for an opposition centre forward. Such a bizarre habit that he has. He definitely did it twice in this game. So strange.
Leon Bailey off the crossbar after knocking the ball through per Robinson. I mean, the dip on that shot was great. This is after a Jacob Ramsey drive up the pitch as well. Like, it's a... He comes short, he plays a nice ball to Moreno first time, which is good. And then the position and the touch to take it back off Moreno again is even better. Then he gets too excited with such a heavy touch. But then he's strong and he's hungry and he wants to win it back. And when he does win it back, he powers up the pitch and he feeds it out to the right-hand side. And Bailey comes back inside. And it's just a great shot, so unlucky.
Yeah, Anthony Robinson was as confused as his parents were when they tried to spell his first name. This was absolutely disgusting. You cannot defend against that type of player. Like, how do you stop someone who can do that? Like, that is the type of goal you take into a contract negotiation. That's the type of goal you take into the bedroom, if I'm being honest, Conan. Honey, I'm home. Oh, don't come in. I'm just getting changed. Are you watching Leon Bailey again?
Douglas Luiz butchered one then. Like, Watkins was to his left, Tielemans was to his right. The shot was in front of him as well. I think everybody just wanted him to shoot, and the pass is just awful. Really, really poor from Dougie, actually.
Yeah, really, really bad. I mean, the pass was never going to make it to him. It was a bad angle to him. There was a defender there. So it's the three things you would never associate with Douglas Luiz. Terrible. A little flick with the outside of his boot. It was so weak, so strange.
Fulham got a corner. Fulham should have got a goal from the corner, of course. Rodrigo gets a header.
All necessary parts of that sentence there, Connor.
Rodrigo gets a header. Ramsey's on him. Torres seems to be too busy watching the far side of the box. That's not on Torres. That's on the setup. And Ramsey's on Rodrigo, who gets up above him and heads it very powerfully. Heads it down, heads it wide.
Yeah, it looks like we've learned our lesson from having Kamara marking the opposition's best attacking header. So now we've switched to Jacob Ramsey. Like, we were never going to make that mistake again by putting a big powerful centre midfielder on somebody. Fuck that. What we need to do here is put our little live wire centre midfielder on somebody.
Poor Youri Tielemans, like, he just doesn't have the pace. This is the thing. It's hard to give out to him for this. I know it was frustrating. I know he wanted him to hurry the fuck up. I know Watkins was waiting on him, but he couldn't do anything. Like, he's trying his little hardest there to get up with the play, and he does get there eventually. But by the time he gets there, the keeper's out on him. Like, Watkins won the ball so well, centre circle, and then he just drives straight through the middle, waits for Tielemans, and he rolls at him, and Tielemans is too slow getting up into space. And there's still a chance after this, and Leon Bailey's dicking around, and Douglas Luiz is standing looking at him. Are you going to play it to me or not? And he eventually just hits it over. He wants a corner maybe, but Jesus, that was really casual from him.
It's brilliant from Watkins. Just again, the anticipation and then the quality to exploit it, to know that if he does the right thing here, there is a goal on. The little Cruyff drag back just gets him up the pitch. So much space in front of him then. And Tielemans, I mean, that was probably the longest run he's ever made on a football pitch. But I think you're being really kind to him. They say he just doesn't get there, and then the keeper's out. He does get there. Watkins plays a perfect pass to him. For some reason, Fulham don't realise what's happened. I couldn't have possibly expected that Tielemans was going to take so fucking long to get up the pitch. But they don't react to it. They don't go out to Watkins. And Watkins rolls the ball perfectly in front of Tielemans. And all Tielemans has to do is put that ball 6 inches into the air and it's a goal. But he doesn't.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Then from the corner, Longley had a header, and then Watkins had a header. We should have gotten a second before halftime. That was all just before the break.
Yeah, was it not Watkins that got up in front of Longley, and then we didn't get a replay of it.
No, we didn't get a replay of either of them actually, because they were sure that the second one was such a bad miss from Watkins. Well, it looked like it just got blocked down, but I would have liked to have seen it again.
Yeah, like, but both of them just hit off the back of somebody's head. So, like, if Watkins is feeling bad about Tielemans robbing him of an assist, imagine how bad he feels about the ball just bouncing off the back of Tim Reid's head as he's wandering around his own box, confused.
I don't think we can count Jacob Ramsey's hot air balloon shot, can we? That is still rising, I'd say.
Yeah, it was really good movement, but he fucking got under that more than Pep Guardiola gets under my skin, Colin. It was fucking dreadful. The stadium, I know Craven Cottage isn't that big a stadium, but you shouldn't be putting a fucking ball over the stand.
And then Watkins hit a long range one wide. Iwobi hit one off Martinez's legs. He's coming in the left hand side. And probably the winner, and especially because of the importance of it. You already touched on it, but I mean, Traore went straight through, ball in between Torres and Lukadin, and Traore's through, and Martinez with a France World Cup final type of save, with an Australia World Cup quarterfinal type of save. I mean, just brilliant. Basically telling the forward where he wants him to go and then making the save.
Bert Leno versus Tielemans save, even, Connor. it is. It's Demi Martinez save, isn't it? He makes it so often. It's so good. Whenever somebody goes free one-on-one, though, you're not necessarily expecting your worst. You're waiting to see what Martinez can do, which is such a rare thing to happen in my lifetime, with somebody bearing down on the Aston Villa goal. You'd be thinking, hang on, let's see what's going to happen here. There was another one as well, though, where the ball came across to Munez. He makes a bit of a mess of it when he flicks it with the outside of his right boot, his ankle almost. But it's probably going in because he's so close in. But Douglas Luiz comes flying across like a good boy, snapping at his ankles and gets the block. And it was like the first time I've seen Douglas Luiz defend with such aggression as well. It was absolutely brilliant to see. And that was really when I realized how much we were digging in, when I see Douglas Luiz doing the dirty work.
The Peter Enkelman What the Fuck Award, I mean, it will take some beating Clement Longley for the Fulham goal, but John McGinn at defensive midfield just getting pickpocketed, and that leads to Castagne's cross, and the good Longley block, in fairness, and that's when the Di Cordova Reid incident happened as well. This is what happens when you lose the ball right in front of your goals.
It normally results in a chance for the opposition, and John McGinn did it again in the second half, and he got very lucky to get a free kick. I mean, a different referee, a less clued in referee, a referee who's trying to, you know, let it flow, doesn't know, understand the rules of football, might have just played on there, but we didn't have that.
And then Matt Cash clattering into Emi Martinez as well, definitely deserves a nomination, just because I thought he injured Martinez, and then of course I should have realized Villa are ahead, they're away from home, Martinez probably loves this, but Cash was...
That's not a nomination, that's not a what the fuck nomination, is Ronaldo not hitting it, the advisory award nomination from the two of them.
You think they were both at it?
Yeah, definitely. There's no reason for Cash to jump, and there's definitely no reason for Martinez to jump on the ground.
Yeah. I want to go to the Weimann meter early, because there's a lot of people, a lot of things to discuss, so it's about time we brought this forward. And the first person to talk about is Matt Cash. I did talk about how tuned in he was in this game, and there was one there, like we praised Austin McPhee for being able to use an offside line for defending set pieces. And Matt Cash is playing a Iwobi offside. He does it so well. He steps up, he keeps the line. And it's here, this like isn't a common occurrence for Matt Cash. So he does it really well, deserves praise. And he still gets around to block the ball at the other side then as well, even though it is going to be offside eventually. And he blocks the rebound from that block too. Just that sort of summed up Matt Cash today. And I know they were using him in a more defensive role anyway. It was like, this is a great idea. Why don't we... We were all worried about Longley playing on the right-hand side of defence, but the way they sort of let Moreno back up the pitch like it was last season, and then it meant Longley was a bit more central then, rather than just always being on the right-hand side. Every time Longley was on the ball, he was still able to come in on the left-hand side.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact that Matt Cash has played this role for us before was a little bit strange that we never tried it. We haven't tried it since... Or we haven't tried it with Matt Cash in the team. We've just, every time Matt Cash has been in the team, he's been playing as a galloping fullback. I could think of another adjective for how he was playing as well. But he was really solid defensively today. And we know he can do that. We know he does love a challenge. Matt Cash does like the game whenever it's tight as well, because he likes crunching into people. And he does like last-ditch defending. And with the current setup at the back, there is going to be probably a lot of last-ditch defending for him to do. So hopefully he continues to do it as well as he did today.
I think with Matt Cash is that he just needs one instruction. And unfortunately, when part of the instructions are, we need you to be an attacking outlet, he foregoes the other side of that. Like, he focuses on that, and he focuses on trying to shoot the whole time then when he hears.
Are you saying he needs one instruction, or he can only hear one instruction?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think he needs one because it's like, well, it needs to just be just defend. if we are playing him, then yeah, forget about it. It's like just defend. Matt, did you hear that one? Defend, like that, because you can do it. Like, you are aggressive, you are up for it. So just be up for the whole game, and he was in this match.
And it is a nice way to get around the Longley Torres problem as well, with the two of them playing there, because it does allow, like you say, Longley to play as a middle centre half, then to play in the middle of the three. So yeah, good. That's possibly Glenn Whelan, definitely not a Glenn Whelan nomination.
Tim Sherwood, we played two number 10s and bamboozled them. Oh, you and I, Emery, winning another Tim Sherwood award.
I mean, imagine I couldn't remember the name of the tactical award, even though it's named after Tim Sherwood.
The fans deserve to be going up on the Weimann meter, because the chant after Fulham's disallowed goal, "We forgot that you were here," just brilliant. Just like, especially in the context of the Fulham fans getting a lot of grief, and it's becoming to a lot of people's attention and how quiet Fulham fans are, how polite they are, and then just when they finally got a cheer in when they thought they scored, and the Villa fans reacting with "We forgot that you were here," that's a group of people having fun out there.
Definitely, yeah. Make the most of your day out in London, Connor, that's what I say.
Yuri Tielemans, does he go up? Because he lasted 93 minutes. I think he deserves to go up for that. I think after 70 minutes, I thought it was clear. Yeah, Yuri's starting to gas here a little bit. What did you call him, 20 minutes? So it's like, you know, the fact that he was getting 70 great minutes out of him, I thought that was good. Now save him. But he lasted another 23 after that. Well, he was on for an hour 23 after that.
Yeah, his heart rate was definitely going up, I'd say. Like, I really, really, really hope Yuri Tielemans isn't a union man, because he has had a massive change to his working conditions without a change to the terms of his contract here. Yuri Tielemans hasn't signed for Aston Villa to play a full game of football, Con, and it certainly doesn't appear that way anyway, based on how he's performed to date. This is absolutely, completely unacceptable from Aston Villa as an employer to ask Yuri Tielemans to go out there and stay on the pitch and perform for 93 minutes. Incredible.
What do you think of Lewis Smith, the referee, the debutant referee? Just Howard Webb go up? I thought this referee was all right. There is a question of how is somebody being fast-tracked from League 2 up to the Premier League in one season, like 25 games into the season? And it's not only that he's been fast-tracked, this boy has been promoted from League 2 to League 1, done his stint there, League 1 to Championship, did his stint there. And it's like, right, get him in, send him into the Premier League now. And I don't know. I thought he did well. There was one where Watkins, he was appealing for a foul on Diop. He was saying it was a handball. Again, you were wondering, why did he give that to Fulham? That was a bat. And then you looked at it, and it was actually Watkins who handballed it. And that was a really good call as well, in fairness.
Yeah, I mean, you're asking, should Howard Webb be going up there? I mean, fast-tracking a referee, he's able to identify that somebody might be better at this than Michael Oliver. Or fucking Anthony Taylor. Like, well done, Howard. Like, you didn't, football's the same at all levels, Connor. That's what I say. I'm going out to Craven Cottage in front of 24 people or whatever it was. It isn't exactly a high-pressure situation either. Obviously, he can do this job as well as David Coote can do it. You fucking don't forget. Howard Webb's responsible for David Coote being in the Premier League, so we can't be praising him too much for getting somebody who's competent at the job. And the game got a bit messy towards the end. I don't think that was anything to do with him, though. I think that was to do with the absolute cynical play from Aston Villa we were playing,
yeah,
and allowing Luis Boamorte to jump up and down the sideline as well. He probably could have got a hold of that. There was one moment, though, that I'm really not happy about, stopping the play for Pereira. I mean, like, this was, I remember John McGinn ran into the back of Andres Pereira, ran into the side of Andres Pereira, and the play developed for another 2 or 3 minutes after that. Villa had the ball. This has to stop. There are so many simple, small things that the lawmakers and the law enforcers could change to make the game more enjoyable to watch and to reduce the amount of fucking time wasting and cheating. Don't stop the play because someone has run into someone on a football pitch. And especially if it was John McGinn's arse. I mean, is there anything softer on a football pitch? Apart from Pereira's mentality, obviously. There is no way you would feel anything other than comforted or relaxed. It's like falling into a fucking bed with a duck down duvet on it. Get off the ground, you little prick. The ref definitely
Definitely can't go up this week, can.
Well, it's his first week as well, so he can't go down either. So we'll keep an eye on Lewis Smith. Zaniolo, speaking of being cynical, Zaniolo has to go up holding the ball away from Robinson, who's trying to take a throw in. It was only for a few seconds, but Robinson was trying to get the ball and get it back in the play. I don't know why he was taking the throw after his shenanigans, but he was, and Zaniolo was keeping it away from him. Maybe he's the winner of the Shithousery Award.
Like, if that's what he was doing when he wasn't even on the pitch, he definitely would have got sent off when he came on, if that was the type of nonsense he was on.
Yeah. But it did get to that stage. Like, you're right, because for a period, I was looking at Marco Silva going crazy, and I was like, what do you think's happened here in this match? You know, they've got a shit goal, and now he's carrying on like they're really being screwed over here. And then the more I watched it, the more I realised Villa are doing these boys now a little bit.
Villa are doing these boys, and Villa, like, Villa got two really shit goals from two Fulham mistakes. But I do think the manager needs to have a bit more composure. He can't let that seep into the team, because then all of a sudden the players are all hyped up. And sure, Fulham players were running straight into the back of Aston Villa players for fun, except it was only fun for Aston Villa players. Fucking idiots. Like, the amount of stupid fouls they gave away, the amount of times... Like, they gave John McGinn everything he wanted. Like, John McGinn turned around. There was Adama Traore, so this isn't going to be that surprising. But Adama Traore was about 5 yards away at one stage. John McGinn had time to look over his shoulder, see that Adama Traore was coming at full speed, and just stand there. That's all he did. He just stood on the pitch, and Adama Traore ran straight into him and then started giving it the big one as if John McGinn was, you're a fucking idiot. Yeah. He can't just run over the top of somebody.
It was ridiculous. McGinn was hanging over the ball, looking back, saying, come on then, make my day. Go ahead. And he's doing that thing then when Adama Traore was giving out. He wasn't really looking at him. It looked like he was saying something, probably trying to wind him up a bit more. And then they said on commentary that he was having a smile at Marco Silva then afterwards as well.
Absolutely brilliant. Probably told him how shite his coat was.
And that was just before another player going up. Tim, get the foot in Erugmanin, because we know we might need to spoil a lot more now that Kamara's out for the season. And he won that ball back off of Adama Traore rather than us sinking back, rather than him stepping off. He just stepped forward and took the ball off him, and that led to the ball going to John McGinn, who then won the free, and that was basically the winning of the match. So Tim, very short appearance, but a very good appearance.
Yeah, you're right. He stepped forward and won the ball back. He stepped forward to the wrong side of Adama Traore, I would say. It was very risky. Nah, but then again,
he just said defend whatever way you like against him.
Exactly what I was about to say. I immediately caught myself there, Conor. Remember the player you're playing against.
Yeah, Tim, play the man, Erugmanin. Going down, this isn't the award, but going down, Glenn Whelan is going down. Because this week, I've seen Glenn Whelan on Twitter. Didn't know he was on Twitter. Still haven't verified that it's actually him. But let's say, for all intents and purposes, it is. They were celebrating Conor Hourihan's goal against West Brom in the playoff semifinals. It was just going around social media. And Glenn Whelan replies, tags in Conor Hourihan, says, save my ass that day. Something funny. I don't think it's joke worthy. I mean, we're watching Unai Emery cook with Aston Villa right now because he did save yours. There's nothing funny about Glenn Whelan letting that ball go through him when he's trying to take a touch, and letting Dwight Gayle, I assume it was Dwight Gayle, go straight through and score a goal in the play at home at Villa Park. And we were battering him and we couldn't get the fucking goal. That's why Hourihan's goal was so important. It was such relief, as much of a screamer it was as well. But we were fucked until that. And we eventually got the second one. Like, that series, that playoff semi-final tie went to penalties, all because Glenn Whelan couldn't take a touch of a ball in championship level football. I'm not ready to laugh about this 5 years later. There's nothing funny about it. It's not by you either. Hourihan can maybe make that joke. You can't come along and try to own this now.
You said something very strange there. It was like, I didn't know he was on Twitter. I didn't know he was on the football pitch half the time. He's supposed to be representing Ireland or Aston Villa, Conan, for fuck's sake. How would you know he was on Twitter? And this is gonna sound like hyperbole, but has anybody ever hit the ball better than Conor Hourihan hit that ball in that semi-final? I mean,
the way he struck that ball was so strange and so confident to just whip it like that, but also hit it so straight initially is fucking insane. It's an incredible, incredible strike of a ball.
This is why sometimes I wish the show was just, you know, on a radio where somebody could just flick in or drive into the shop and then they just catch it. And it's just us talking about Conor Hourihan scoring a goal in 2019. Has anyone struck the ball as well as Conor? It's like, what the fuck is this shit? And they flick it over to just some music channel instead. Don't do that, by the way. What a terrible advertisement. Glenn Whedon, 91 caps for Ireland. You probably had a season ticket for all 91 of those as well. The only other person... he's not going down, right? Maybe he's going up because it's great for his career. I have to look at the captain here. Maybe he has to go down. Cal Newsom, a barber, is coming into Aston Villa's training ground to cut their hair. Is this being okayed by Unai Emery? Is it being okayed by the same person that's given Austin McPhee free reign? Because this barber has free reign. He's coming into Villa's training ground and cutting people's hair. It's a training ground. I thought they were all going round to Diaby's house. I mean, I know you think as well, you're looking at the low fade a lot of them have, the way they're all doing their fringe, and Tielemans and McGinn definitely have it. But no, Tielemans and McGinn are getting their haircut by Cal Newsom at the training ground. And I have to tell you who else was getting their haircut. Longley's getting it. Didn't fucking look like it was cut. Longley's getting his cut, and Callum Chambers, that was the four that he posted on his Instagram account. But I just thought it was a bit strange. I mean, surely, I don't know, do I sound a bit too much of an old school dinosaur, a proper football man, saying that wouldn't happen to my day?
Yeah, you definitely sound like a proper football man talking about haircuts on a football podcast. Like he asked there, like, who's okay? And this is Austin McPhee okay? This is in here. Has this segment of the podcast been okayed by everybody involved?
Yeah, I was just slagging the last conversation, thinking I was moving it on to something better.
Let's stop talking about Conor Hourihan's left foot magical strike and talk about fucking haircuts in case people think we've lost the plot altogether.
Stop getting sidetracked, Liam. I suppose McGinn does have to go up though because he's playing in that role now in midfield, and you know I thought we looked pretty competent anyway. It's not the same when Kamara's not there, but it's probably the best solution, right? We're back to the Douglas Luiz, John McGinn double pivot after all these years.
We are, yeah, and we always loved it back then, Conn, so I don't know what the problem is. I know it was a really tight game, so he probably didn't want to do it, but I'm surprised he didn't give Timbo a few extra minutes because he's definitely going to be needed before the end of the season. Perhaps it wasn't the game to do it. Maybe at home to Nottingham Forest he's more likely to play 30 minutes in. I mean, God knows if fucking Tielemans played 93 minutes today, Rubin would probably have to end up playing 70 minutes. Tielemans be taken off in the first half, poor guy. So maybe that's what he was thinking there. It is the best solution. I think John McGinn has to play in there next to Douglas Luiz. Douglas Luiz was nowhere near as influential today as he normally is because he was obviously dropped a little bit deeper and John McGinn was probably playing more in the Douglas Luiz role. But it works a lot better, obviously, whenever we've got a manager who's the player set up. And as John McGinn would tell, he tells him where to stand on the pitch. And the fact that we're playing this system with Tielemans off Watkins, Tielemans is a lot deeper than a traditional number 10 would be. Jacob Ramsey's playing on the left wing. I think he got enough bodies in there, Conn. I think the system works pretty well. It's worked pretty well for 30 of the 50 Premier League games that Emery has managed.
And you know what, Liam? There's only 13 Premier League games to go. Suddenly, when it felt like we were crawling through the mud there, it felt like we were just drifting off into space. Suddenly, I can see the light. I can see... crawling through the mud.
We won two games ago.
it just felt like, you know, this is either petering out or it's just come to a halt. I don't really know what it's all for anymore. You know, I think I used a grim thought to the last day. It was just like, just put me out of my misery. That would have been better, sort of thing. But now there's 13 games to go, and I can see the summer is coming. I can see the sun coming up on the horizon, and I can see us making it through these 13 games, all the injuries and everything else to go. There's only 13 matches left, and we're in a good position. We're back in the top four because Spurs went and lost to Wolves. Now, we'll have to play Wolves at some stage, and we'll obviously lose them like we always do. But We've got Forest at home next week. We've got Luton away. And then we've got Spurs at home. We could be really motoring home with 10 games to go. And there is suddenly a bit of optimism in there again. There's a big chance in there. And I think McGinn put it really well the last day when he said, we can still create something special this season, despite how sickening it was last week. Still in our hands, and it very much is, as we sit in the top four, Liam, with only 13 games to go.
Incredible.
Let's just leave it at that. We'll see you next week. Have a good one. All the best.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.